This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we are talking with Gray Area. Friends, surprise, surprise. I'm pumped, man. This is sick. So, MJ, we have you here. How you doing? You doing okay?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to be here. Can't wait to talk about what we're going to talk about. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. So I told Sir Matt, I said, this is like leveling up. You know what I mean? This is like a hedge knight walking through Westeros. And somebody said, look, it's time to promote that guy, you know, whether it be captain of the guard or whatever. But we feel like we're moving up in the world a little bit here. We were on your live stream a couple Fridays back. And you were talking about Lady Stoneheart, I think. Weren't you like in Catelyn?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was sick. That was actually pretty. That was a lot of fun. And so we had our guys. We were in here on Zoom, and we were actually all kind of listening in on your live streaming. Do you do that every Friday?
Yep, every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Right now, we're talking about the Winds of Winter characters. We've done one House of the Dragon episode, and when House of the Dragon comes out, we're gonna cover House of the Dragon immediately after the episode on Sundays. So that should be interesting.
Nice. Is that, you think that's what they're going to do? It's going to be on like it was before?
Yeah, yeah, the regular Game of Thrones slot. I think that's what they're going to have.
Yeah, that's sick. That's perfect because one of our favorite memories from, you know, a Game of Thrones was going in on Monday, talking to, you know, people at work, and you just saw it Sunday, and you get in the water cooler conversations, and what'd you think? What's going to happen? So I cannot wait for that to come back.
I can't either. Like, I love Netflix. I love binge watching series, but I really like appointment TV. So I really like to give myself time to wonder what's going to happen without being able just to click to the next episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Cause then it gives, it's nice to go compare notes with people. I mean, really like whether you're a content creator or you're actually just showing up at work saying, you know, what'd you think? Or here's what I saw. Or did you see the necklace she was wearing? And that could mean this, and there's symbols, and it's nuts, like the amount of detail that goes into the shows, and then everyone kind of having their ideas as to where it's going. So yeah, it's just wild.
For sure.
And the crazy thing, so season 8 was the most recent hype that we had for Game of Thrones, and now we have House of the Dragon. But can I ask you? I told you I was going to ask you a couple of just random, you know, questions here about Game of Thrones and what have you. So we're going to dive. Matt, are you ready for this? Because we're
let's go. I'm ready.
Okay. So season 8, what were your kind of thoughts like after as that was going on? Because the big thing is Winds of Winter is not out. We don't really know, and so we're all trying to figure out. At that point, everyone was kind of on the same. Well, maybe even season 7 a bit, right? People are thinking, I don't know what's coming next, and I'm not really sure how these arcs are going to play out. And we got to kind of see that on HBO. So what'd you think, I guess?
Can you cuss on here?
You can cuss.
There you go. That's literally all you needed to say. I was like, okay, well, here we go.
Well, so my initial thoughts was, what the fuck is this? Because, like, I appreciate Game of Thrones for what it is. It's a TV series trying to adapt an unfinished book series. But also, like, the way it wrapped up, I felt was just so kind of disrespectful to the source material. But at the same time, I fault George a little bit because, like, bro, it's been like 10 years. Mm-hmm. Where's the book? Yeah. Where's the Winds of Winter? So, like, Dan and Dave didn't really sign up to write A Song of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really expect A Song of Ice and Fire from the end of Game of Thrones, but damn, like, I expected it to make sense. And I felt like a lot of it didn't make sense. A lot of it was like, let's just shock the pants off of these people. And it was like shocking in a bad way. Like the Arya killing the Night King, I really thought that was like, eh. And I saw this meme and it was like, John's asking Melisandre, like, why did they bring me back? And Melisandre's like, because your sister's going to kill the Night King and it would mean a lot for her if you were there for it.
God. Seriously, though. Seriously.
Yeah. And then, like, Dany burning down King's Landing.
Yeah.
I just was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Like, I will admit that Dany is going to get a lot more fire and bloody, a lot more Aegon the Conqueror-ish. Right. But to win a battle where you're sitting on top, you beat the army, and to hear bells ringing and just go completely insane and just start burning women and children, it just made no fucking sense.
Yeah, I think it's going to, obviously, it all feels really super simplified, you know, and it's just like, streamlined or not even exactly what's going to happen. And I appreciate you saying that about Dan and Dave, though, because that is not what they signed up for. And I feel like, man, they get absolutely demolished, and maybe they should. I get, like, some people were, George was saying, well, why didn't we, you know, a couple more seasons in there, there was source material that we could have kind of, you know, he thought, I think, would be longer. And they did have to meet with him, figure out what is going to work, what of his plot lines can they do, can they not do, and then make some shit up.
Yeah, they were in over their head, and, like, I appreciate them bringing A Song of Ice and Fire to the TV. I just don't appreciate how they fumbled it. Yeah. And also HBO, like, why are you letting these two guys tell you, like, HBO's like, yeah, I'll give you unlimited money. We want it to end good. And, like, why are you letting these guys tell you 6 episodes is enough to wrap this up? It's not. There were too many, like when we talk about A Song of Ice and Fire in the book series, I don't even think two books is enough to wrap it up.
Yep. I'm with you on that. Yeah. So why we'll probably never know, but all the pressures behind the scenes to not give it its space or explain things a little bit more. Like, I'm sure there are nuggets in the books that we might see, like, where Dany gets jealous of whether it's Aegon or whoever else. Like, maybe there's some stuff that goes down, like, I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah.
But
the lack of context, really, is, it's like the decisions, okay, well, like, it's hard to sort of grasp how we get to those points because we have no context for it. It's like,
yeah,
people are upset that Bran becomes king, and it's like, well, if you give me enough reason to explain why he should be king and why that's a good thing, then okay, I'm with it, you know.
Yeah. It's a great story. It's the greatest story we've ever heard. You know?
Who has a better story?
Somebody posted on Reddit yesterday that there's actually it's when Stannis, it's when Kat in Clash of Kings goes to meet with Stannis, and she says that we should call a great council. And let Bran tell his story, and everyone's like, uh-oh, is this, like, did we just find the ending? I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Well, apparently George is the one that told them it will be Bran at the end of a Game of Thrones. And I, in my, like, trying to reason with what happened, because I'm not going to lie, like, that really, like, was a gut punch to me that Game of Thrones ended like that, because I love it so much. Yep. And I'm just trying to reason in my head, like, what's going on. So I'm like, well, the show Game of Thrones was really about the throne more than the supernatural A Song of Ice and Fire part. That was just kind of thrown in there. But most everything was, like, about the throne. And I feel like George gave them some broad strokes. Yeah, Bran's gonna end on the throne. Like, all the promo for season 8 was about the throne, not really about the Night King. Like, the Night King's eye, I think there was like the Night King's eye, the all the characters sitting on the throne, and like the official hashtag was for the throne. So right. It's all about like the throne, and the supernatural elements were just kind of thrown to the side, and they didn't really worry about it so much. So we got these bullet points, but like you're saying, we didn't get the story and context behind these bullet points. So it kind of like, there's no way they could make it make sense in 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And we've said, and I've said before, at least, really for me, when I felt like things seemed off, the first time I ever felt like I watched Game of Thrones and I was like, okay, something seems off. For me, I don't feel as upset with season 8. For me, it's season 7.
Oh my God.
I remember because Ez and I would watch, and we watched that entire season like together, and then we record about it afterwards. We kind of looked at each other when it was Arya and Sansa and Littlefinger, and we're like, I just kind of feel like they don't know what to do with Littlefinger. Like, the writers are just like, we don't know what to do with him. Because I was like, it was the first time I ever felt like, this is, like, bad.
Yeah. <You know>? Like, I feel like they didn't know what to do with Arya and Sansa either. Because I feel like they made people hate Sansa because they totally contradicted her book. Like, book Sansa would never treat Arya like that. Like, mm-hmm. the growth that she's had since book one, like, Game of Thrones Sansa might treat Arya like that. A Game of Thrones, like, first book Sansa. Mm-hmm. But, like, after Sansa's been through all of this, these trials and tribulations, to think that she would get her sister back at Winterfell and just mistreat her and, like, try to kill her is insane to me.
Yeah. Yeah, because she, all that growth that she's going through right now in the Vale and everything, it's totally different, and you don't get as much of that. And that's where it does feel, like Matt's saying, like, and I think a lot of us know this, the context matters, the story, all the arcs that they go through, how they're changed when they come back. Because, like, I keep thinking about you saying that about Arya killing the Night King, and I'm like, yeah, what the hell was Jon supposed to even, what, like, why did we bring him back? I mean, it's just, it doesn't make as much sense at all. So the one thing I wanted to ask you too about was Dany. I've heard, and Sir Matt told me this, and so I want to make sure this is true. So, like, as you said, you really don't think Dany is gonna go Mad Queen.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Like, all of that. So season 2 of A Game of Thrones, where they say, like, I will take what is mine with fire and blood, I will lay waste the armies and da 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 da. That is all shit that they made up. Like, a Clash of Kings adaptation to A Game of Thrones from Daenerys's POVs is complete rubbish. It's like complete and utter bullshit. So if that is the foreshadowing that they're using for this Mad Queen turn, that's that's insane. Also, they talk about, D&D was like, in season 1, Viserys, when he dies, Daenerys has no reaction. What kind of reaction do you want her to have? Because, like, this guy is abused her, like, beat her, pinched her nipples when he's angry with her. She lives in fear of him. Like, he tried to rape her the night before her wedding.
Yep.
So it's like, what are you talking about? So if that's cold, is it cold that Sansa fed Ramsay Bolton to dogs? No, it's not cold, because that's her abuser, just like Viserys is Daenerys' abuser. So I find it really stupid. Now, will she make a mistake? Will she make a mistake? Could she make a mistake?
Yeah.
Probably. But, like, Aegon the Conqueror torches Harrenhal. Nobody gives a fuck, because it's Aegon the Conqueror and Valyrian the Black Dread. But if Dany torches the Red Keep and then accidentally sets some wildfire on fire and explodes some shit,
right?
She's not Dany the Conqueror with Drogon, or is she crazy?
No, that's a really good point. Like, because also we know all of the wildfire that's there, and there's the whole Sept of Baelor, but, like, there's these caches that are left over on the other side of the city that, in her attack, I mean, that's a really good point. She could trigger something that, you know, kills a lot of innocent people or whatever, But yeah. Also, I know we're diving into almost like Winds of Winter stuff here, and we'll get to House of Dragon in just a second, I promise. But Cersei, do you think Cersei's going to be in King's Landing, or do you think she's going to move, like in the books, do you think she's going to stay like she does there, or do you think she's going to kind of move out, or any thoughts on?
I have thought about that. So I thought, to me, it would make sense for Cersei to go to Casterly Rock, because Casterly Rock is like I think Visenya says they can't penetrate Casterly Rock. Yeah. If the Lannisters hadn't went onto the field during Aegon's conquest, then they would have never been able to penetrate the rock. So the whole Field of Fire thing happened because they leave the rock. If they were in the rock, nothing could have happened. So it would make sense for her to go there, but it also kind of makes sense, like if White Walkers, I don't think they'll get this far, but if White Walkers were to come south enough to where they threaten King's Landing, Storm's End is a castle that's protected by magic, Children of the Forest magic, kind of like the Wall. So they wouldn't be able to penetrate, the White Walkers wouldn't be able to penetrate Storm's End, just like Melisandre can't get the Shadow Babies to penetrate Storm's End.
Yeah, that is a sick point. And we always think where, you know, like Winterfell is where everything is going to, you know, something's going to happen majorly at Winterfell, which probably is. But Storm's, like this storm that might be coming could end, right? I know we always think about from the sea, you know, like the sea storms and all that kind of stuff. But that's a really good point. It's Courtney Penrose. They're trying to kill him.
Oh, and, God, I love him.
Yeah, and it's like they can't get the Shadow Babies in there. They got Davos got to smuggle them in there. That's crazy. I forgot about that. That's a really good point.
I definitely do think that the White Walkers will make it past Winterfell. I think every war is fought in the Riverlands, and Dany has a dream in A Storm of Swords where she's riding to the Trident and she bathes, and the usurper's host is armored in ice, which is some White Walker symbolism, and she bathes them in dragonfire.
Yeah Wow.
So one of the things I would say, one of the things we've done pretty much since season 8 is we look at a lot of the, I guess, major sort of what seems like bullet points that we got in the show that maybe George told them, hey, here's, you know, like Bran will be king, you know, events like that. And we've said, you know, what characters do we think from the book that may end up happening to? And sort of speculating, like, what can we actually pull from the show? So, like, Hodor. I think Hodor is probably going down the same way because...
Yeah.
Did Dan and Dave write that? I don't think so. Like that's George, just too like
it's George helped with that episode.
Yep. Yeah. So then another one we look at is maybe like, okay, we see Jorah Mormont show up at the Citadel and Sam sort of cures him of his grayscale. Like, is that gonna be John Connington? You know, and just so stuff like that. So is there anything that you kind of felt like in the final few seasons, like, oh, that is probably going to go down. It might be a different character, but that event will probably happen.
Theon, the way Theon went out fighting for Bran, I think that's definitely foreshadowed in the Winds of Winter chapter where I think it's Asha is like, feed him to the trees, do it Ned Stark's way if you're gonna do it, and the raven is like tree, and I feel like Theon really has paid for what he did to the Starks. Like, he's paid 10 times over. No one should suffer like that. I don't care what you did, you shouldn't suffer like that. And I think there is nothing left of Theon, and while he's still Theon, I think he wants to die, and I think he would be a willing sacrifice. And blood sacrifice is a very powerful thing for the Children of the Forest. Like, we see it in Bran 3, where they go back in time and they feed that captive to the Weirwood Tree. I feel like that's Theon.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to die like that, but I think he is going to go out for Bran.
Right, and he's got this... kind of somewhat of a redemption arc. Yeah, he's not gonna be wielding a spear or going crazy or whatever, maybe, but that's cool. I like that. Yeah, and actually sometimes this is a triggering thing. Like, some people hear us say, like, wait a second, like they want to throw every nugget out of season 8 or season 7, which I get, but we sometimes just go, well, I don't know, like, why did they do that? Did they do it based upon a nugget that George gave them And how much did Dan and Dave twist those nuggets to say, because they're all distorted in some way. There's nothing, I don't think, that he said, well, unless it's like Hodor or whatever, you know, but there's a lot of stuff that he just gives, and then they have to go and make it work with different characters or a lack of context. So
I can tell you one thing I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah.
That white hunt where they go north and they try to find a white to bring it to Cersei. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
That whole thing was really asinine. I don't think that's going to, like, there's no way that's going to happen.
And that's what, because they lose a dragon.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Like, yeah, that's another big thing, because I know there's I've seen YouTube theories and things out there where people talk about the idea that could happen. Are we going to lose a dragon that way? Or is there an ice dragon? Or, you know, what's the whole spiel on that?
But I think there will be some kind of shadow dragon. She sees it. Daenerys sees it in the House of the Undying.
Yeah.
Where she sees a great winged beast taking off, breathing shadow fire. So I think that is possibly either Jon Snow's resurrection, mm-hmm. or it is an actual literal shadow dragon.
Yeah.
I did this. I don't know if you know a History of Westeros podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did this Tyrion Winds of Winter episode, and there's like this. There's a lot of foreshadowing in that Tyrion sample chapter where he sees like the white dragon is covered in blood and it's like laying on the ground. It's a Syvas piece. And I feel like any talks about Viserion being on top of the tide. It's Viserion that he sees, the pale dragon. And I think something might happen to Viserion in Meereen.
Okay.
In Meereen.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. So yeah, not even this whole idea of getting over to Westeros and something crazy happening there. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. They're way over there. People forget where Meereen is. It's like way over. There's a bunch of sorcery and there's other, you know, religions and stuff over there. So interesting. Wow. She won't
leave him there. If he gets injured, she's going to bring him injured to Westeros on a ship. Like kind of like Aegon Sunfire, where Sunfire gets hurt really bad, but he doesn't die.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Love it. You know, it's just all of the Winds of Winter stuff. Cause there's so much, you know, so many different ways we can go. And that's why I think we totally agree with you that I don't know that it's going to be, I don't know that it's going to be two books. I think it might have to be three to really even finish this. Cause we've talked about writing Winds of Winter. And I think I've always said this where I'm like, I think the final book is probably the easier of the books to write, because it's kind of like I describe it as like you're wrapping a present, right? And you want this like really elaborate bow. So all you have to do is just kind of like pull it and then it all just unfolds. Cause you know, you've had the finale in his head for God, like 30 years at this point.
Yeah.
And so it's Winds is the harder book to write, because you have to get, you know, we talk about all the moving pieces and you know, how are you going to get this here and here? I mean, the toughest one for us is like Stannis. Like, man, because it seems unlikely that Stannis might even go lose, and so he's the kind of the key piece you're gonna have to move. So once we get him out of the way, okay, then maybe you can set up a Battle of the Bastards. And but in the show we see Jon go to Hardhome but before he dies, but that's not what he hasn't, you know.
Right.
It's like so many moving pieces, and how do you maneuver all like, this stuff, and Sansa's still in the Vale. I mean,
logistically, I don't think it's possible to get Daenerys to Westeros before the end of Winds. Like, the end of Winds might be her arriving to Westeros, because there's no way, like, she's in Meereen, or, well, she's in the Dothraki Sea.
Right.
That whole thing where she kills all the calls and gets the Khalasar behind her, I feel like something similar to that is definitely going to happen in the books, because in the House of the Undying, she sees all the crones kneel before her in the shadow of the Mother's Mountain.
Yep.
So something like that is definitely going to happen. So that has to happen. The war, the battle for Marine has to wrap up. And then George doesn't do like journeys where you're on a ship and then you're there. Like, look at how long it took Sam. How many Samwell chapters did we get with him just traveling from Braavos to Old Town, like on the Cinnamon Wind? So we're going to have a lot of chapters like that with Dany.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyrion, same way, right? Like when they're traveling, you get all these different, you know, let's, this is them on their journey. And you're right. Specifically on a boat, when Sam's traveling, that's a good point. Like, you're like, wow, when are we going to get there? And it actually kind of, as a reader, it's a little bit of a drag and you're almost like, come on. But there's really important stuff that's being, you know, Aemon is saying things that are really important. And we're like, we should be paying attention to that. But we're out on the freaking, just, you know.
There's just so many more pieces too. I mean, Lady Stoneheart and Young Griff are just two pieces that, you know, the shows never even touch. And it's like, these are, I mean, that's like 20 chapters worth of stuff just to, even if you just kill these characters off, which seems unlikely. I mean, less Lady Stoneheart because she's been around for a while, but certainly Young Griff. I mean, you're not just going to introduce a character like that and then kill him off so we can move past it and get.
Yeah,
to
you're gonna. He's like, George is going to wait till we're emotionally connected and invested in him before he kills him.
Yeah, yeah, he is, absolutely. I kind of have a guilty pleasure one here. Okay, last one, and then we'll move to House of the Dragon. Can I add, because I know it was in your live stream and we all were kind of, we had our thing going on here. We were all bouncing there trying to hype you up as much as we could. So we want everyone, all of our listeners, to go over there and check out those live streams. But you guys were talking about Lady Stoneheart, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge fan. Like one of the sayings on this podcast for us is, I always say back to Lady Stoneheart, meaning like it's so different.
Everything connects to Lady Stoneheart.
Could hinge around. Yeah. It's right there. We're in the Riverlands. We're in the heart of all of this. You've got Jaime, Brienne, and I have no flipping clue what is good. I've thought about a bunch of different things that could happen. But what was your kind of like ultimate where do you see that going? I mean, Beric Dondarrion is still alive in the freaking show and it's there like fighting
makes no
on.
Sense.
It's fighting
makes
on.
No sense.
Yeah.
So Lady Stoneheart, in our last episode that we did this past Friday, it was about Sansa, and Sansa is in the Vale, and she has sent out, like, they're having this tourney for Sweet Robin where he's gonna like get these Knights of the Falcons of the Vale or something, right, like this special kind of King's Guard situation. So she's gonna have this tourney. So I don't know if Jaime or Brienne get news of this tourney, if the Brotherhood get news of this tourney, where they, I don't think Lady Stoneheart's going to kill Jaime. I think he has to escape that cave some kind of way. Mm-hmm. Even though it's some kind of like foreshadowing that he dies in a cave.
Yeah.
Because his Weirwood stump dream is like him and Brienne fighting in a cave and his sword goes out.
Right.
And he's actually fighting dead people. Like, he's fighting Rhaegar, Shadow, and all that stuff. So that kind of is scary for Jaime, for me, because I love Jaime Lannister. But I feel like Lady Stoneheart might go to that tourney with the Brotherhood.
Wow.
And see her daughter.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that would be wild. Yeah, because they're having that whole tourney, and it's one of the, it is a wins. There is a chapter about it, I think. There is a Wins, I think, preview chapter. I have not read all those, just so you know. So sometimes
If I'm spoiling it.
No, it's fine.
I've read the, like, if I, I've glanced through them. Like, I've some of them I've looked at, and yeah, I look them up on the wiki or I move around. But that one I do remember reading, though, and that one was about like the winged knights or whatever, like the brother. It was like eight, like they're trying to get, like, he wants eight versus seven Kingsguard or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the tourney. You think that Lady Stoneheart might show up with the Brotherhood without banners? That would be okay.
Yeah. I mean, the some of the members of the Brotherhood are known for fighting in tourneys and all of that stuff. And then there's like some really extravagant theory that Harry the heir is going to die at this tourney. And then Sansa may marry a Targaryen, which gives the Jonsa people a lot of hope. Personally, the Jonsa theory makes me want to throw up, but but it could be like foreshadowing that Sansa may end up betrothed to Fagon, which or Aegon, which kind of, I don't know, muddies the water a little bit for what's going on in Dorne, because it feels like he might be marrying Arianne or like someone. I think Alicia said on the Direwolf City podcast is like, Aegon's probably like, well, why can't I have two wives? Aegon the Conqueror had two wives. So there may be something going on.
Okay. That's always been a hiccup, because like she's there going to Storm's End, and I think it says in that Winds chapter that he's already on the field. He's left and he's facing Mace Tyrell. So like, they've already got the Tyrells set up to meet the Golden Company and Fagon, Aegon, whatever. And I was thinking, okay, how do you get Sansa there? And you also have this whole thread. But if he's gonna have multiple wives, well, there we go. That would work. Wow. Okay.
But did you want to know like ultimate ending? I think that I think Lady Stoneheart is, once she finds out Sansa is alive, once she finds out that Arya is alive, I think that Bran is going to try to contact her through like the Weirwood net. Mm-hmm. Because by the time, like, some time will be passed, he'll actually know what he's doing. We've already seen that he's seen his dad. Mm-hmm. And when he says something to his dad in the books, his dad actually turns around, like he hears something. Mm-hmm. So I do think that you can hear you can communicate in through the Weirwood net. I don't know why Blood Raven says no, you can't. I think they kind of don't want Bran fucking with shit. Yep. But I do think that he's gonna try to say something to his mom.
Theon almost hear his name at some point? Like, doesn't he? Yes. Almost hear Reek. Yeah. Okay.
I've always wondered about that, as if Bloodraven saying you can't do it, as if maybe Bloodraven has tried but was unable to, and maybe Bran can, because Bran's like, you know, even more sort of special than Bloodraven. And or do you just think it's Bloodraven's like saying don't do it because you could mess stuff up?
I think it's Bloodraven wanting Bran to do specific things. And not wanting him to get sidetracked with other things. Like when Bran falls off the tower in the very first Game of Thrones, in the very first book, he's falling from the tower, and he remembers who pushed him from the tower. He remembers that it was Jaime that pushed him. Jaime's face floats up in front of him, and the Three-Eyed Crow is talking to him, and he's like, no, you don't need that. Forget that, push that away. Right. And then when he wakes up, he can't remember who killed him. And it's like, okay, so you don't want him to remember that Jaime killed him because it's not important to what you need him to do.
Right.
So I feel like them saying you can't change the past or you can't communicate with people is bullshit. And it's going to interfere. He feels it's going to interfere with what they need him to do, which is to help them with the others.
Interesting. So there's almost going to become like maybe a conflict between Bran and Bloodraven, or he's just going to be so involved in his own family affairs that he's doing these little side quests to kind of communicate with.
Yeah, like they don't want him moonlighting. They want him to focus on the task. Don't moonlight.
Gotcha. I like that. That's cool. Yeah, because I just haven't really. I do feel like Lady Stoneheart needs to come in contact with one of, if not both of her daughters in some way. And she was also there, as you said, with Bran. She stayed with Bran. She almost didn't leave Bran, but then in Game of Thrones, she's like, I have to. I have other children who I need to go see after, but it's Bran who she's with that whole time, and she's attacked. So, yeah, it makes sense that Bran would be the one to kind of reach back and talk to her.
If you really love Lady Stoneheart, I really cannot suggest enough Joe Magician's Red Wedding 2.0 video. I think that's a really interesting take.
Okay. All right. Definitely. I'll check that out. Yeah. Yeah. He's another awesome creator, by the way, who I have recently come across and enjoy his videos for sure. I haven't seen them all, so that's one I'll have to check out.
If you love Lady Stoneheart, you'll love it.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, let's shift gears here and talk just a little bit about House of the Dragon, obviously the upcoming prequel show to Game of Thrones, focusing on the, you know, the Dance of the Dragons. This is just all it's also sort of speculative because we don't really have a ton of details here. And, you know, all of our information comes from World of Ice and Fire, the two novellas, and Fire and Blood, which a lot of it is just sort of recycled material of its of itself. But, you know, what? Who out of this whole story, like, who are some of the characters you think you're, like, most looking forward to seeing that we're finally going to see on screen?
I'm so cannot wait to see Daemon Targaryen, Corlys Velaryon, and Rhaenyra and Rhaenys.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Blacks and House Velaryon and all of that. I mean, House Velaryon has been kind of, I know you've talked about it on your YouTube channel. We've talked about it a little bit as well. I'm fascinated by it. I do think it's awesome. I think the sea snake is sick in the adventures and like all the stuff that you can do with that. They are planning a sideshow, aren't they, like in between House of the Dragon? Are they doing something with that?
So, rumor mill. George signed like a huge deal with HBO for like all the rights of all of his shit and the rights to the actual universe setting. So it is in my opinion that they are doing like an MCU type universe, but in Westeros. So the news report was basically like they want to do like all of the Sea Snake's voyages. They want to do Duncan Egg. They want to do like all of Fire and Blood. It's just like tons and tons and tons of content. And I'm here for it. I love it.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Cause I think, look, you've got these great castings and I really think that would be cool to see. Take us as far as you can. Take us to these, over to Essos, to Ashai, to wherever we, you know, need to go.
Valyria before the doom. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be sick. That would be sick. I'm glad they're doing a Westeros verse, and I like that House of the Dragon can be this point where we start at, and let's march through some of the Targaryen history, do some of these offshoot, you know, kind of quest, build to Blackfyre Rebellion or to Duncan Egg or whatever. Yeah, that would be sick, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, it's definitely going to be sort of an MCU type verse that they're doing. And now, you know, so as we just talked a little bit about, you know, like HBO kind of just got sold off / getting merged, sort of. That I don't know if you saw that or not, but there's like basically like a huge mega like $80 million deal that happened where AT&T is basically sort of spinning off HBO and it's merging with Discovery Channel. And so it's just interesting, right, that George announces that deal that, like, oh, hey, 5-year, I think it was reported to be seven-figure deal, so probably like $10 million a year, so $50 million is sort of where we've been guessing. And that's just weeks before this mega deal that obviously has been in the work for at least, like, I mean, that's got to be in the work for, like, years or something. So, if you're Discovery Channel, ultimately, who's now getting to manage HBO in this new thing, and I think they're going to be like, all right, well, we got to milk our biggest sort of asset for HBO Max here. It's going to be Game of Thrones. It's going to be Westeros.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, yeah, it really does. Like go for it. It was so successful. Game of Thrones was just, how can you not just ride that wave and just keep pushing this stuff? Plus, you're going to give us more dragons. Holy smokes! Yeah. How many? I mean, that's the big deal. More dragons in House of the Dragon. It just, yeah. So
yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I think that House of the Dragon is the most ideal place to start because it's one, it's a full story that they have a lot of the story. Now they have a lot of the bullet points, so there's a lot of story to be filled in that we don't really know about. But also, like, it gives us Targaryens, it gives us dragons, it gives us war, it gives us all these things that Game of Thrones made famous. We'll have House Stark still. We'll have, like, all the major houses that we're used to in Game of Thrones. So, like, everybody's, of course, not a Targaryen fan. Well, good. You have Kraig and Stark. Everyone's not, you know, like, people like Lannisters. Good. There are Lannisters. So I think it's a very, like, I think it was a very smart decision to start here. And not necessarily like the Blackfyre rebellions, because I feel like that could get confusing if you don't get some of the backstory starting here. Because like, the Blackfyre rebellions is what I really want. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dunkin' Egg that can run congruent with that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a really good spot, and we get to know more of their family, see them at in their prime, really, there with their dragons, and like what the heck happened to all the dragons and what happened to the Targaryens, and this is that big event where George kind of explains that. And I like that you said there are bullet points, there's a rough outline. I think we're, you know, going to be surprised. I think there are going to be big surprises that George or whoever is going to write some of these things and fill in the gaps, and we're going to go, holy smokes, like getting us attached to characters that we didn't even know we would be attached to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what we kind of need. And we like those characters, and then they're ripped away from us. And we're talking about it on Monday around the cooler going, I did not see that character dying.
Like,
who, like, because we know the major characters and we kind of know their arc, but I feel like they're going to build in some people, whether it's servants or other knights or who knows what. But there's enough room for that, which is why I think all the excitement is there. And also, like, some of the leaked photos with House Velaryon showing up and where they're at on the beach, and it seems like everyone's kind of there. I'm trying to figure out what the heck is going on. At that point, you know, is at the start of our show, is there a funeral? I'm already wondering, like, all these things.
Yeah. That was actually one of the questions I had just pinned down here. Is like, yeah, where do you think we've been talking about? Where do we think this is going to start? Where do you start this show?
Well, George said in his Not a Blood post that if you want to know what's going on, to read The Rogue Prince. And The Rogue Prince is kind of more about Daemon and his adventures and his, like, battling and the Stepstones. So we know that Daemon marries Laena, and we know that Laena dies. There does seem to be something going on Driftmark. One of the leaked set photos, there was tons of driftwood on the beach, and that's what Driftmark is known for, driftwood washing up. So they're definitely at Driftmark. There definitely seems to be like some kind of sarcophagus type of tomb thing that they're dragging around the set with the House Velaryon symbol on it. So we know that Laena does die. However, Laena dies way later in Daemon's story. Like, she has twin daughters for him, Baela and Rhaena. But are we not going to get to see him in the Vale with his bronze bitch? So I don't know, like, if they're going to composite characters. We know Lady Misery is being casted, been casted. So she's going to be around, and he has like a relationship with her first before Laena, that while he's still married, actually, where he like presents her this dragon egg and him and Viserys getting an argument over it. So like, Laena's death predates a lot of things that we need to see. Mm-hmm. So Laena's death is before the infamous green dress and black dress, Targaryen dress. It's before that. It's before we get to see the relationship between Daemon and Viserys, which I feel is a very important dynamic if you're telling Daemon's story, because a lot of what Daemon does is for his brother. Like, there's this thing, I just want to talk about it real quick. We can move on. I don't want to like hijack anything. So Viserys sends Daemon away, and Daemon is pissed off with his brother. And at this time, none of Viserys's children are dragon riders. Maybe Rhaenyra, but she's a child and she has Syrax. But Daemon is like teaming up with Corlys Velaryon, and his daughter has Vhagar. Laena has Vhagar, which is the biggest, oldest dragon in the bunch. And Daemon has Caraxes. And then Rhaenys is also a dragon rider. So you have all these dragons. You have the Valyrian fleet. Like, if Daemon was like this huge monster villain that they make him out to be, he could have took King's Landing right then and right there with his allies, what they had and what he had. And he doesn't. And I feel like he doesn't because he actually loves his brother.
Yeah.
And his Daemon and Viserys' relationship is kind of like a Tyrion, Jaime Lannister relationship, and it's a big part of why Viserys does the things he does and why Daemon does the things he does. And if they don't show that, I feel like they're doing a disservice to the show. So I feel like they will show that. And George saying to read the Rogue Prince, which includes a lot of that stuff, makes me think that they will show that. And we know that they don't film in order. So the ending of season one of House of the Dragon might be Laena's funeral.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we might be seeing something later on in the series that we're going to build towards. And they probably will maybe move some of these pieces around, like deaths or the sequence of events. And I think you're right. They do need to show this because they were close. I mean, during the council, when Viserys is being picked, like Daemon's backing his brother, and there's different points where he's on the council, you know, and then so he's kept close, and he gets frustrated. He wants to be named, you know, heir and all this kind of stuff. So we do need to understand that a bit and understand why he's getting close to Rhaenyra. And also, as you said, well, what is her name? Lady Missaria, yeah. Who basically, yeah, his lover, as you said, who that does piss him off. I mean, that did make him mad that he had to, like lost that child, you know, and was scolded by his brother. So there's a back and forth. There's a little bit of a, you know, kind of check yourself, get in line, and at the same time, you know, he's trying to.
Yeah, I feel like you can't really build up the menace, annoying shit that Sir Otto Hightower is without seeing those interactions between Daemon and Viserys and Sir Otto very young.
I agree with you guys too. The you're gonna have to push a lot of this stuff together because the Dance of Dragons is like 20 years. I mean, like the whole sort of story is like 20 years. You can't tell that in like 8 seasons. I mean, it would take forever to sort of to stretch stuff out, and you have to do time jumps and stuff like that. So I think it is just going to be as if it was in the span of 8 seasons, however long that happens to be. Totally agree. I now that you're saying that too, I guess I am thinking about that different. What we are seeing is the end of season one, actually, and that would be a good place. And then that maybe we get that conversation on the beach of Daemon and Rhaenyra there. Well, maybe, you know, it's time we get to, you know, but that happens a little bit later. But that is going to be a dynamic that I think we will see be building. I think even in season one a little bit.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that we know these points. We're getting Fire and Blood is told by Mushroom's point of view, and then you have Septon.
Eustace.
Yeah.
So you have like two point of views, and they never really match up. So like. And then, like, we have these murders that happen. Like, Laenor was murdered. Are we going to learn who paid for that? Mm-hmm. Did Daemon have something to do with that so he could marry Rhaenyra?
Yeah, that's great.
There's going to be a lot of murder mysteries and things going on that we don't have the answers to.
Right, where there's conflicting reports, who was right, who was wrong, who was trying to kind of alter their story. One of the funny things I told Matt to look up for us before we started this was, like what was Mushroom actually saying during this whole time, and how how important is he to this story? Because he talks a lot of smack in his book, and or at least let me rephrase that. He tells it like it is, according to him. Like, he's saying this is the truth. All right, I got nothing to hide here. Whereas the Septon might be trying to sugarcoat things for us. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think he's gonna be in it, or do you think they're gonna? Do you think they're going to say, I can see them saying no just because we have Tyrion in a Game of Thrones, and like, we just don't want to have a, you know, dwarf every show or whatever.
Yeah. But
I feel like he's so important that
it's Mushroom. Like, I feel like he needs to be there, even if they don't make him a dwarf. Like, they don't have to make him a dwarf. Mm-hmm. If they feel like that's going to be controversial, then don't make him a dwarf. But at the same time, he to me adds the humor. Like, we don't really have a character like Tyrion or like Bronn that is just fucking hilarious. We don't have that like icebreaker that in these traumatic situations shit's going down and they crack a joke like Mushroom would do. Being that Mushroom is like the court fool, where he's always joking and saying funny shit, no holds barred type of shit. But when we talked about this on Direwolf City, like, my co-host brought up a good point. Like, is he really needed? Because he's basically the storyteller. So do we really need him to be in the story? Like, I felt like you couldn't tell A Song of Ice and Fire without Lady Stoneheart. And I also felt like you couldn't tell A Song of Ice and Fire without the ghost of High Heart. But they didn't include those characters, and it really, like, upset me. So I feel like Mushroom might be one of those characters that they don't include, and that makes me very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Sir Matt?
I hope they don't. I'm with you. The fact that they haven't cast him yet, but again, it's also a character. You know, when you do all your initial casting and sort of announcing who your cast is, you're like trying to get out the heavy hitters, right? I mean, that's why you obviously start with Matt Smith, because he's by far the most, you know, recognizable, I would say, name of anybody, because he's been, you know, he's Doctor Who, he's in The Crown. I mean, he's sort of the biggest of them. And then as you start going down and down and down, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because, like, when they announce, hey, like, Peter Dinklage is going to be, I mean, at that point, Peter Dinklage, even still, I mean, he's obviously become a way bigger star since, but even before that, I mean, he was certainly noticeable. He was in, like, Nip Tuck, he was in 30 Rock, I mean, he was in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. I think so, like, it would be cool to at least see Mushroom sitting in on some of these bigger events where you're like, well, there he is. So did he go tell, like, even if the door closes, but we see Mushroom was there? Well, now people like us who have read, you know, A World of Ice and Fire or Fire and Blood or whatever, we now can say, well, he was behind closed doors. And like, it just kind of adds another layer where you're like, oh, shoot. Like is that really going to be true? Because he's close with Rhaenyra. I mean, like.
And Viserys and Jaehaerys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like you could have different people telling different things, or we could hear them even giving a couple one-liners here and there that would be fans could take and speculate and wonder about, you know. And
yeah. you could make an original character too and sort of blend, you know, like they did that in Game of Thrones, where they had some characters that sort of serve the purpose of a lot of people. Like, I was Roz the prostitute, right? She filled a lot of just sort of roles for that, as we saw, like, earlier in this. And you could do the same thing here. It doesn't necessarily have to be Mushroom, but you could have somebody fill that role and sort of blend. Yeah. And they're gonna have to make a bunch of original characters, just because they have bullet points of this whole thing.
I honestly feel like, I don't really know, but are there that many opportunities for people to be casted as like dwarf?
Yeah, I don't think
so. This is an opportunity for someone to get a job, let them get the job.
Yep.
Like, don't worry about, I don't think there's anything wrong with the optics, because that's how Westeros was.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think they will actually have a Mushroom casting. I just don't know that he's going to say a whole lot, like you said, or that he's going to be someone who we follow quite a bit. I think he'll just be around our cast. I mean, it's almost the way I think of, like, when Patchface shows up on the page, I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy's still, he is that, he's always around. He's just, you know, here he comes. But he's not who we focus on. So Mushroom's that guy who's, like, walking in and out, doing funny things. And yeah.
And it could be like, it could be a casting where, like, it's not a known name. So they don't announce it, because they didn't announce who's playing Laenor or who's playing Laena. And I think they're like character or castings that just aren't well known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's okay. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just some other just kind of things here. So this is one I was kind of thinking about. I said, I thought of the idea, this just, we haven't talked about this ourselves. Do you think that we will get any answers to questions like that happen later in the series? So, like theories or nods to things, like we got this in the final season, at least something to come out of it. We got kind of Jenny's song, like the full song. And so I was wondering, do you think, I'm not saying we're going to see White Walkers, but like maybe, or like something that alludes to like a little bit more about like the Red Priestesses or like Quaithe or something. Not that we're going to see those specific characters, but just things that could sort of help, that are going to build this universe and maybe give us some kind of ideas or hints to the, like, bigger overarching theories that we have, you know, like a Shai or stuff like that.
Yeah. So there is one thing that happens in the Dance of Dragons that is kind of like points to Robert being killed by Rhaegar on the Trident. Hugh the Hammer hears this prophecy about, yeah, the hammer will fall on the dragon and a new king will rise. Well, Hugh the Hammer thinks it's about him, but it's actually about Robert Baratheon killing Rhaegar. So I think that there will be some things like that. I also would love some more songs to be completed. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So yeah, I do think they'll do that. Ryan Condal, the guy that's writing mm-hmm. This series, is a fan first. Like, he's a huge fan of George. Okay. And I feel like just by the costume accuracy in the pictures that have been released so far is 100% book accurate. Like, Rhaenyra's costume is 100% how she's described in the books.
Yeah, that's good. That's encouraging, because it's always nice when you have someone who has been a fan of the series or is understands like some of the fan theories, or even just has been around it and enjoys it and wants to bring it to life in an authentic way. That is encouraging. So that's cool. And to Matt's question or point, like, I was thinking about dragons being what we know in A Song of Ice and Fire. When dragons return, all of a sudden the pyromancers' spells are working better and magic's doing things. And Quaithe is talking about, the guy who's walking up the fire ladder, right? And mm-hmm. a year back, he couldn't have done that, but now dragons are back, and maybe that brings some magic and some power. I wonder if Daemon's Mistress of Whispers is going to be using some magic and some spells. Are we going to, see
she's totally,
some, you know? Yeah.
She's totally going to be that Melisandre.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is cool, because you do want to have this focus around, like, there's a lot of political stuff. There's a lot of, like, the murder mystery, working towards the Iron Throne and all that scheming and stuff going on, with a layer of, well, dragons are magical, but then also we're going to do some blood magic maybe, or we're going to do some spell work, or maybe there's someone who's glamored. Mm-hmm. when we see some more glamoring, because that's sick. Anytime somebody takes off, and like, if all of a sudden we're following a character who we didn't really, I don't know, as a part of their costume, we're not paying close attention, but there's a ruby or there's some other type of sapphire or something, and that comes off and they change. I mean, I don't know how it would weave in there, but it'd be, be cool.
Well, we do know that, like, the writer, Ryan Condal, is a big Dunkin' Egg fan, and, like, everyone feels like Maynard Plum was a glamour, like mm-hmm. a Blood Raven glamour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he could totally be down with the glamouring, and I'd be all for it.
Yeah, I just think it'd be really cool. Even if someone was going into, like, the king's private kind of council glamored, but coming out and we're realizing, oh, shoot, that's not a guy who should have known that information and is now passing it on. I don't know how you would use it or where it would play out, but...
Yeah. Tinfoil Mushroom is glamored the whole time, and he's not really Mushroom.
Oh, my God. God, that would be amazing.
Yeah. I was looking at this because I was listening to Fire and Blood yesterday, and I forgot, because like Danny's eggs, right? Like, we don't know where they came from,
right?
Like, one of the theories is it was Alyssa Farman who mm-hmm. took him to Essos, but maybe we could see something similar to that event. I mean, that happens way before the Dance of Dragons, but maybe we could see something like that, because there are going to be a lot of dragons. There's going to be a lot of dragon eggs. I think maybe something that could almost serve, it's kind of brutal, as sort of some comedic relief, or it's like when they're trying to get the dragon riders and they're just like having like people hop on to see if it's going to work.
Yeah.
And they just seeing people just like massacred. People like, oh, I can ride a dragon. No,
yeah.
So
get
like
wrecked.
Something, right. Just get wrecked. And so maybe we could see something like that where, hey, some of these dragon eggs are stolen or something. And it's just like, oh, okay. Maybe that is where Danny's three come from or something like that. Or like that. I think that would be sort of a cool tie-in to like
that would really be.
Yeah. And even like Valyrian steel swords and things like that, like objects, there's little tiny things that you could maybe tie in or hint at or what have you. That would be really neat to see them do that.
Another thing where you were saying, could we get any White Walker juice in A House of the Dragon? So we know that Jacaerys, Rhaenyra's oldest son, goes to Winterfell, and there's like a different, there's a bunch of different versions of the of what actually happens. There's like three different versions, but we know one of the versions is the whole meeting, the whole joining of the North joining with Rhaenyra is called the Pact of Ice and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also like this secret wedding that happens supposedly in the Weirwood Grove. So Jacaerys supposedly marries Kraegon Stark's bastard sister.
Okay.
And we never know like what would force him where he's already betrothed. Like if this is true, what would make him wed her?
Yeah, Sarah, I think is her name.
Sarah Snow. Yeah. What would make him wed her when he's already betrothed to Baela or Rhaena? He's betrothed to one of them. Mm-hmm. So what would make him wed her? Well, I was thinking, what if when he goes up there, he promises, like, Kraegon Stark tells him about the White Walkers or the others, and he's like, one day they might come back. One day I might need you to help me fight them. And that's why they have this secret pact and wedding kind of thing. So we could get something like that, and I would die.
It's really, I mean, we only get bullet points of it, but it sounds so much just like, you know, like Rhaegar and Lyanna. I mean, so much of it. It's like,
yes.
The parallels are crazy.
And then his dragon supposedly goes into the crypts and lays eggs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Down there. And like that's the secret wedding. And again, all mushrooms.
Dragons will wake from stones.
Supporting this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wild. That is a whole nother side thing with Winterfell that people kind of forget about. Like, that could be some major tie-in right there. What are there dragon eggs in the crypts of Winterfell? Like, what the hell? It's actually something Mushroom says. Like,
I know. See, a lot of the problem is a lot of this has to tie into the show Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
So like because that stuff could happen to Winds of Winter. I mean, you could still do sort of fan service of stuff in there that could be like, oh, well, this could happen in the books. Like we see it and we kind of pull from it because we don't know. Another one I was kind of thinking of, because I think would be really, really cool would be like if we see some, I think we will maybe at some point see some faceless men or something. I mean, just they're going to be assassinating each other left and right. But what if we saw a faceless man and he changes his face and he changes it to like Jack and Hagar's face.
Oh my God. Because
it's like that, face has just been one that they've been able to use for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And that would be awesome.
That would. And they do go to Braavos, right? They send a lot of the gold to Braavos.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hold in the Iron Bank.
Yeah. What's his name? The Lannister, who's Master of Coin, who splits all the money up.
Yeah. I love it. I'd love that.
Yeah, getting those factions back in there and using a faceless man, I think is sick to kind of. There's gonna be a lot of backstabbing and people who want to off this person.
Blood and cheese.
Yeah. So did Daemon hire somebody like that because he's trying to now? There's an opportunity to get with Rhaenyra, or he needed to get Laenor out of the way. Whatever it might be. So, yeah.
I think Rhaenyra had a part to play in that.
She didn't
want to be married to him.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah, maybe, and that's the thing. There's a lover in the book that they actually supposedly is paid to go kill off Laenor or whatever. But I'm just thinking, you know, if you wanted to kind of up the ante a little bit, maybe you use someone a little bit more, like an assassin of some kind. Just an extra little you don't have to, but I mean it's just things that they could do that would be kind of cool. So yeah.
Yeah. Just like one or two more questions here, I suppose. Is there any house, maybe outside of House Valyrian, because we kind of know that we're all going to see them? Is there any smaller houses or any that would like are a little more prevalent in House of the Dragons that you're kind of looking forward to seeing or anything like that?
Let me see. House of Valyrian, of course, but
yeah, for sure.
I feel like House Celtigar is another one that really doesn't get any shine, even though they've been loyal to the Targaryens for so long.
Yeah.
But I doubt that we'll see them.
What about Dorne? I mean, is there going to be, you know?
They don't. They're not. they're not super prevalent. Because what's his name? Because when Viserys tries to, or when they try to establish the marriage alliance, he's like, I'd rather sleep with a scorpion. The Prince of Dorne's like, leave me alone.
Yeah, they aren't really prevalent. I mean, House Dane. I'd like to see House Dane, but they're not really prevalent either. Yeah. I think Lord Mooton is interesting, so I hope we get to see him.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just, I
mean, the High Towers are kind of also an easy one for this one, but we don't see them really during Game of Thrones. We will definitely see some High Towers here.
Yeah. For sure. Well,
and that's interesting, right? That they are it's the same thing with House Valerion. They're a bigger house during this time period. Then you get to A Song of Ice and Fire, and what's up? They're still at Driftmark. They're still important and have a good, strong presence at sea. And we have the Bastard of Driftmark in the series. But, the High Towers, I mean, we're going to get there, I think, in A Song of Ice and Fire. But they're a big, big, big deal early on in all of this. And then they kind of, you know, drift away. So yeah.
How about Elmo and Kermit Tully? Are you guys looking forward to
no
I like I totally forgot I totally forget that they exist. It is real, man. Elmo and Kermit Tully, as they're running House Tully right now.
I'm looking this up. There is no way.
It's not a joke, man. It's the real deal.
Matt told me this the other day, and I was just like, because it's we're getting back into reading Fire and Blood, yeah, and stuff. I was like, there's no freaking way.
Yes, there is. Look it up. Sir Harwin Strong. Okay, he's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I love the clubfoot. Lara Strong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So smart. Smart guy.
Wow.
It's a real.
Whole
I told you.
Page on Kermit Tully.
Yeah, because Elmo. I think it's Lord Grover Tully. When the Dance of Dragons breaks out, he wants to support the Greens. Make sure I'm getting this right. And Elmo Tully's like, we're not supporting anybody because we know what happened when, you know, the dragon came to Harrenhal last time, you know, and like just torched the Riverlands. And then he ultimately sides with them. And then he dies. And then Kermit Tully's the one that's
no. No, Matt, hold on. Okay, also, so let's see. Let me just read this. When the Tully host arrived in King's Landing, blah, 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 moving on. Kermit, his brother, Sir Oscar. Kermit and his brother, Sir Oscar. Am I making that? That's what it says in the book.
Oscar Tully.
Oscar Tully. Was he grouchy?
Who knew George was a Sesame Street fan?
Oh, my God.
Have you ever seen the? It's incredibly odd. Like, I don't even know why this exists. There's a Game of Thrones commercial, and it's literally Elmo. It is the puppet Elmo talking to Cersei and Tyrion.
I did see it.
It's so bizarre. Like, who was your target audience for this? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm hoping that the kids who are at the age of watching Sesame Street are not watching Game of Thrones.
Yes. True.
God.
Oh, my God. I did see that commercial pre-season 8, I think.
It's, like, so bizarre.
That just sent me down a hole. I mean, so, MJ, when is the Kermit video coming out? When's the Kermit and Elmo video coming out on your channel? My God.
Not going to lie. I've read Fire and Blood thousands of times. Well, not thousands, but lots of times. And never picked up that the Tullys were named after Sesame Street characters.
Yeah. I didn't. I thought Matt was kidding. I really thought he was joking.
And it's only because I was reading House Tully's page, because I'm working on a thing right now. Just like, here's what's going on in sort of like all of the main houses, like just as we get into it. It's just sort of like a brief guide. Yeah. And so I'm reading House Tully, and I'm like, Elmo, okay, like, whatever. And then I read Kermit, like, immediately after. I'm like, hold on a second.
Stop.
Like, something, like, this doesn't add up. Like,
Sir Oscar. Was there a big bird there as well? I mean, is that their fool? I mean, do they have some, like, you know.
Well, I mean,
what's House, that elephant's House name Aaron? With the lashes?
I don't know.
Is there one named that? Because I love that elephant with the lashes.
Somebody's got to be there eating a bunch of cookies, too. I mean, Like,
seriously. Well, Rhaenyra eats a lot of cookies later. And her, like, man, she
gets a bit. That's mean. God, that's wild. Well, I mean, that's cool to know. I mean, how House Tully. Yeah, because it is cool to see, like, the other little houses show up and figure out who we're going to gravitate towards and think is kind of cool. I just think Dorne got, did nothing in the main series, really. I mean, they totally didn't know, and Matt says this all the time, didn't know what to do in seasons, whatever season it was where they had
five. Five.
No idea. No idea what to do with them. And they're just in, then they're out. They're going to be a way bigger deal in the book series. And so I'm like, we can't get any redemption for that in this. And it's really not in the outline, but probably not.
But in the Westerosi universe, like MCU type of universe, Westerosi verse or whatever, we should get, I think one of the things that Entertainment Article had quoted was Nymeria and the 10,000 ships.
Oh, okay.
So that will be heavy, 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 heavy Dorne. That's and if they cool. ever do Aegon's Conquest, which how could you not? Yeah. that'll Dorne will be included a lot in that. And then like when you talk about like the 10,000 ships, you get to see the Ronar before they came to Westeros. Mm-hmm. So you get to see like that water magic and
right.
all that stuff. So that's really interesting and something to look forward to.
And that's a good point. Yeah, they don't have to be in this. We can see them in other projects, which would be really cool. And the marriage alliances are cool later on, past A Dance of Dragons and all that kind of stuff. They're important, but
they might.
If we ever get Robert's Rebellion too, that's gonna be.
Yeah, and they might bring Dorne in through Christian Cole because he's from Dorne. The so okay. I don't know if they'll what I, they could bring Dorne in through him, if they want to.
Okay, that'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, just one last question here, I suppose. Do you think we will ever see Winds of Winter?
Yes.
Yes. That's what I said.
Let's go.
I can't put bad vibes in the air. I'm like trying to manifest it with salt circles and shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm with you. I keep saying it. People are like, no, Sir Ezra, it's not. Like, people are trying to be super haters. And I'm like, guys, he just spent like a whole year working on this, got a lot of ground, like a lot done. He's fired up. I know he's got stuff going on with HBO and things, and I think that's great. Like, you're getting more Westeros, you're getting more Essos. Like, let the man write his masterpiece. I know it sucks that it's like, and he's even said this. I mean, you read articles and interviews with him, he's a little put out that the show went, you know, at the pacing that it did, and he didn't think he'd need to be. I don't know. It's a lot. He's got a lot of threads going different ways, and he thought he had more time. And then people, he's human. He can get depressed, and he at one point said in an interview somewhere that he was like, he was a little put out that like, so the show was going at that pace and lost his mojo. It's coming out, people. I believe it. I feel it. I know it's coming out, and I can't freaking wait for it to come out. Oh, I can't wait. I will wait, but you know. So yeah,
I think it's coming. I think it's coming out too. I mean, maybe in the next year or so. You know, I don't know. My biggest takeaway from the whole thing is literally, you go look read his Not a Blog for the past 10 years, and it was like, maybe I'll finish it eventually. You know what? I gotta get to it. At least now he's saying I've made legitimate progress on it. It's like, that's all I need.
and look, how good of a marketing move is it to hold it and release it when House of the Dragon comes out? Because that's free promo for you. Like, I'm not gonna say hold it, but to aim to finish it around the time Dance of Dragons comes out, because Fire and Blood, Dance of Dragons, House of the Dragon comes out.
Right.
Yeah. But like with Game of Thrones, when a Game of Thrones came out, the first season, I think a Dance with the Dragons came out like very soon after that.
That it did. You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this would be a good time if he's made all that, if who knows what like where he's at. Maybe he's just in those last couple of chapters trying to kind of, what do I cut and push to the next book? Like, he might be close enough to where he has enough, and he's just trying to figure out how to put it in, you know, to one volume, because the man can write just tons and tons and tons. It's he's trying to make it work. That's what people don't get, is he's trying to make everything, you know, all these threads line up, and really he has layer upon layer upon layer, and he's rewarding the reader for going back and doing rereads and all sorts of stuff. Like, so, yeah, I would think it's a great idea to run it with House of the Dragon.
I agree. And like when he goes on his little interviews for House of the Dragon, he could say, oh yeah, and Wins will be out such and such date.
Boom. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go. Awesome. Awesome. Hey, well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate this.
Oh, I love to be here.
Yeah.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is awesome. Anytime, you know, if there's ever a topic or you want to just, you know, talk or shoot the shit or whatever, we're always down. You guys have a podcast, right? Obsidian Nights podcast? Is that something you guys?
Yeah, so Obsidian Nights is my podcast. It's like my little baby. So I started doing a reread of the whole Song of Ice and Fire series. And what I do is I noticed from doing YouTube for a few years that people comment on the videos and they have very good thoughts. So I was just, it's an open invite. Like anybody that wants to come on Obsidian Nights can come on and do a chapter with me. So I have like many different point of views from people that just watch, just read the books, people that don't necessarily have podcasts or YouTube channels or blogs, or maybe they just have a blog, but they don't have a podcast and they want to come on. So that has been like really, really fun just to like talk about a chapter with anybody. Yeah. And it's been really fun. And then we do Direwolf City. I do Direwolf City with three of my friends / co-hosts every Friday. Those are live streams. And then I do like content on The Witcher and American Horror Story. And I want to start getting into doing, I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn. It's a series. Yeah. It's a series that heavily influenced A Song of Ice and Fire, and it's one of my favorite series. And I want to start doing videos on that as well.
Wow, I know we have a good friend, Sir Jimmy, who that his if he's listening to this, he's a YouTuber, he's a BookTuber, and that's all he has done is preach to us that we should read that series at some point. And I hear great things about it. So yeah, that's cool.
I 100% co-sign Jimmy then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's okay, awesome.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, and we'll have links in the description and everything below to all your social medias and everything. So yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, thank you again for coming on. I've actually been watching your YouTube channel since probably about season 7 of Game of Thrones. To be entirely honest, so this was actually tons of fun for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for having me again.
Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right, guys. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. And our next episode, we'll be back to our reread discussing Chapter 56, Theon 5 of A Clash of Kings.
Yep, absolutely. If you like our podcast, do not forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us that raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week. And remember that winter is coming.